Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go! You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
And ladies and gentlemen, we are live, episode 284. This is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. Thank you all for joining us through Blog Talk Radio and through the Facebook Live WrestleZone.com, which we're going to have our questions right now for live Q&A, as we've been doing quite a bit here lately. So thank you all for your fantastic fan interaction. Continue to have fun. Continue to have a great time. And without further ado, like, just questions away. We're gonna get right into it. With the host for this evening, and with the guest for this evening, former TNA, Impact Wrestling, whatever you want to call it, former Knockout for that company. And, she's got some really interesting stories from her time in Impact Wrestling, being with Petey Williams, being with Scott Steiner, being a part of the Knockouts division. So we're going to talk about it. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring on the show tonight for your live Q&A questions, former TNA Knockouts, Shanisha Biggers, formerly known as Rocka Khan, I think now just Khan, right?
Just Khan, yeah. I dropped that Rocka part.
Dropped the Rocka part. Now, why did you drop the Rocka part again?
If anybody knows anything about etymology, the word Rocka is like one of the one things that is listed in the scripture is something that you should never call anyone. But how prophetic that was. The word Rocka means fool. And yeah. The word Khan means ruler, majesty, royalty. So I guess my name in TNA was Foolish Ruler.
Foolish
and I was
ruler.
Like, okay. Yeah, got it. So, I had to go put the axe to that first part because that's, definitely not my current state. I won't say necessarily that wasn't the truth at that point. Still working on that revelation here. But yeah, we should never call anybody that word, Rocka.
Yeah, that's a no-no. What made you actually go further into that? Does someone tell you what the word meant, or is it something that you just wanted to just kind of dig deeper into, what your name meant?
Once I discovered it.
What made you want to, how did you discover it? How did you discover that what Rocka meant? What made you?
What made me look into it was going through a search for like identity, self-identity, and so many times throughout the sacred scriptures, when names were given, they have a prophetic utterance to them. So it's very important, the name that a person is given. And the funny thing about it is, when I was first approached with that name, of which I had no, I had nothing to do with being named Raka Khan. That was a totally a TNA creative idea. They proposed to me that I could choose between two names. The first name was Taja, and the second name was Raka. Well, I'm from Champaign, Illinois, and when I grew up, especially towards like my high school years, I was a big time into basketball, and my favorite college player played for the University of Illinois. Her name is Taja Catchings. Mm-hmm. And she actually inspired me to do a lot. So I was like, you know, it was actually Dutch Mantel that I was talking to. I was like, you know what? You said Taja, that's it. Like, I'm going to be Taja Khan, not Raka. That sounds so weird. And he was like, okay, fine, you could be Taja. And then, like, the next time I showed up at TV, they were like, nah, we decided to call you Raka. And I was like, okay, whatever. So what happened is, like I was stating before, is that I was going through a period of time where I was doing a lot of soul searching, and I started discovering the biblical principles for what names mean and how powerful they are and how they actually decree a thing over your life.
Oh, yeah.
The name that your parent gives you is a decree. And once I broke down my name that my mother gave me, and I saw the shocking parallels of the characteristics. Now, I didn't find Trinitia anywhere in the scripture, but I did do some Hebrew translations, and the closest name to Trinitia written in the Hebrew is Esther. But my middle name, Danielle, is actually spelled in Hebrew. And, you know, my whole life I'm thinking like, Mom, why did you name me Trinitia? Like, I'm growing up in this like super non-ethnic city, and I've got this totally like Black name and nobody can say it right. And I look back on it, and I started breaking down the meaning of, like, most people that know me on a personal level, I'm Tree. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what everyone's called me since back in the day. Like, I'm Tree to everyone. But my middle name,
that's
as I was dating Daniel, is because I'm 6'1" and my name is Tree Nisha. So it just kind of like makes sense. It was actually one of my volleyball teammates that gave me that nickname back in like seventh grade, and it like stuck with me like for the rest of my life. But Danielle, the way that my mom spelled it, I used to always change the spelling, because not only was my first name very non-traditional, but my middle name is spelled Danyal. So when I type that in on like a name search in that spelling, not the spelling that I change it to, I think it, the Danielle is like German or something, I don't know. But Danyal is Daniel. And I saw so many striking similarities. Yeah, if you type it in on Google, the first thing that pops up is the prophet Daniel. And I very much so describe my experience the very first time I stepped into big time wrestling, not just at TNA, but my first time back at WWE backstage. I remember feeling like a literal like ribeye steak in the middle of a lion's den. I remember writing a journal entry about that. And I was like, this, like, everyone was asking me, oh my gosh, like, you were there. Like, what, how did it feel? This is back in like 2005. And I was like, it felt like I was about to be eaten because it's just so carnal. And like, you know, I don't know why at that time, as immature as I was, like in the spirit that I got that revelation, it didn't fully like make sense to me at all until, you know, almost like 6 or 7 years later. But I'm going to tell you, like, the vibe back at WWE and then going to TNA, when you walk in there as a female in a male-dominated sport, you got to remember there's like, what, I mean, the ratio is ridiculous, right? I mean, mm-hmm. now let's forget about this women's revolution. Let's remember back what the time frame that I'm speaking of, you know, like, what is it, like 1 to 15 or so or something like that? Maybe 10? I don't know.
It was definitely
an
imbalance.
When you walk in there, yeah, so you just, everyone, all eyes are on you, and you're mm-hmm. like, everyone's like, oh, who's going to get a bite of that?
Yeah, basically.
Wow. So anyway, that's what prompted me, like, to look into my quote-unquote wrestling name. And I want to say, like, the first thing that I researched wasn't Raka. It was actually Khan. And it mm-hmm. sent me down this trajectory of really, like, learning about Genghis Khan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people have their opinions of it. But as I was reading and studying the history of that Mongolian warrior, I was just blown away, and I'm almost convinced, like a lot of people think that a lot of that's a myth, you know, but it's just too strikingly similar. I found so many parallels, so then I just like transferred, I'm like, okay, Raka, and like I've heard it before, but where? And then I found the scripture, and Jesus says, like, don't ever call anybody Raka. And I was like, oh my gosh, okay, I'm done with that. So yeah, I take Raka as an offense at this point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well,
just for identification purposes, but it's not my identity, right?
Certainly. Yeah, certainly. So
yeah.
So very interesting story there. You mentioned being a piece of meat to certain people in the WWE.
Said that they were looking like a piece of meat. Let me clarify. Okay, so imagine like you're sitting at your favorite steak restaurant and you're starving and like all you have is peanuts to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And someone else that got there before you already ordered and their steak comes out sizzling past you and the smell and you see the juices and all this stuff and you're looking, that's all they got to do.
I think of like the cartoons where like the wolves were like hungry and like they saw like a it was like a green pea or like a something, and like both of them like imagine like this big, you know, huge steak, and they both like start like fighting over it. And I don't remember what cartoon it was, but sometimes you said that, I thought about that, just as far as, like, you come in and just, like, they're googly-eyed.
It's interesting that you bring up wolves.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
so,
wolves.
So this is, what, 2005?
This is, like, over the course of 2005 to around, like, 2008-ish, 2009.
So are the people, so are some people who said things to you or flirted with you or made some type of advance, are any of them here, are any of them still there now?
Yeah.
Okay. Very interesting. Has any of them been
champion? Well, let me just say, like, it's not like that big of a deal. Silly. Because that's why it looks like you mentioned wolves. Like, they're after everything, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it's not to be something that should flatter anyone that with any mm-hmm. level of self esteem whatsoever. Let me just clarify, like, I am a Seminole. I went to Florida State, like, I played volleyball there. I'm very familiar with like spike testosterone levels.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember back when I was at FSU, you know, like, all the girls on campus are like, it's weird because when you're an athlete, you actually, as a girl, you actually get female groupies
mm-hmm.
that want to be your friend, so then get closer to the boys. And that's a pattern that I was able to pick up on early, thank God. You know, and so, like, we don't see the guys the way the outsiders that aren't in that, like, I mean, like, the athletic department is like a fraternity sorority in itself, especially at a school like Florida State. So we see the boys as like our brothers. Like, there may be one that you like have a crush on, but for the most part, they're disgusting. Like, you see them like running through girls all the time and like It's kind of icky. So it was like the same with wrestling. I don't think a lot of people understood my background when it came to like, well, they didn't. There was nothing to understand because they didn't know me at all. They were just going based upon past actions of other female wrestlers.
Yeah.
And you can't put everybody into a box, you know. But yeah, when I was in WWE, I was single. I had just gotten out of a pretty scary situation that I didn't know was scary until I looked back on it like years ago. I just remember thinking like, oh, I'm so relieved right now. Like the WWE saved my life. Like I would have still been in Tallahassee. Thank God I'm in McDonough, Georgia right now. Like he can't get here and I can just move on and focus on like the next level of my life.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like when I got to, when I got like halfway through my short tenure in developmental, I ended up falling in love with an indie wrestler at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were still together when I went to TNA, and that really angered a lot of the guys. They would approach me and just be like, oh, you're dating that guy. And then they would like point out one of his very prominent attributes that he has and ask, oh, how could you date someone that looks like that? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, look at you. You're disgusting. And I saw you with like 4 or 5 some desirable type people just like 24 hours ago. So why are you talking to me? But no, they're very bold. Some guys would, some guys would be stalking, following you to Waffle House after the show, like trying to get you to go into their hotel room. And then the next morning, the next evening at the show, they'd be introducing you to their wife and kids.
Oh.
And I was just really blown away by that. Like, I'm shaking this lady's hand. Oh, my God. Like, do you know what your husband is doing?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the sport of professional wrestling. Unfortunately, you said the word carnal.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the scenery within that backstage. I know people who are backstage. I don't know. You know, it's awesome to talk to someone who is so strong in her faith that we both share. We both are devoted in our faith. And it's
yeah,
really
by
cool.
The way, like your entrance music, it got me hyped up. Like it's so crazy.
Yeah.
Like the bars about Jacob and that whole thing is about wrestling. Like people, I've been blown away by how much the Bible speaks about wrestling.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to start preaching a sermon or anything like that. We can save that for another channel, another time. But yeah, it's definitely a wrestle. It's a spiritual wrestle. It's a supernatural wrestle. I look at wrestling as it's basically a very Egyptian empire. It's very Roman, if you will. Like I don't think it's any coincidence that they name that gentleman Roman Reigns. You know, they are not lying. Like Rome never fell. It just dispersed throughout the world.
Very
so Rome does reign.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to just tell you, like, if you look closely at what they named, as soon as they gave him the name Roman Reigns, before I saw or heard anything about him, and I saw the name Roman Reigns, I knew for a fact that he was going to be pushed through the roof based upon his name alone.
Oh.
And I will tell you this. I'm sorry. What is the guy's name? The Demon? What's the guy that's
Finn
the
Balor.
Demon?
Finn Balor?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I knew for a fact that he was like one of their favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
I mean,
they were talking about the pattern. Yeah, they were talking
I'm sorry.
Yeah. They were talking about like the Irish connotation of Finn Balor So yeah, definitely namesake. You're definitely right about that. Very interesting take.
Yeah, we're back on that name thing. I mean, come on, Khali, he's a great guy. Dalip, he's a great guy. He was down at Deep South when I was there. Very nice. But they named him after a demon. Google it, you guys. Khali is a demon. It is a serious demonic entity. And then we have my childhood favorite, The Undertaker. Like, everything is glorifying death, sex, you know, all the seven deadly sins and violating all the Ten Commandments, all the wickedness of the world. You know, it's really, they really imitate real life beyond what we can see with our natural eye, more than the average fan catches on to.
Yeah, that's why, you know, that's why, you know, it's so funny because I was talking to someone, I was DJing a wedding a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, I write, and I've been a wrestling journalist for quite some time now, and I've had many, many comments throughout, the time that I've been writing, and, you know, sometimes the wrestling, the fan base can get quite cultish, and I was telling someone, man, I was like, you know, that the pro wrestling community can get really they can really,
it's
like,
idolatry, let's call it what it is.
And you know, I was thinking, like, I told someone, I was like, you know what, I'm so glad I'm a Christian, because, like, it would be tough to be a wrestling fan if I wasn't a Christian.
So let me just tell you a little bit, since you're touching on that, about my struggles with my faith and being in WWE developmental. I had just actually been given a storyline to go to TV before I was released. And it was Ricky Steamboat, Ricky Steamboat that approached me and let me know about the character. Now, this character, I was so excited to hear what he had to say. I'll never forget the moment we were sitting back in the girls' locker room at Deep South, and he told me that the first thing he asked me is, can you jump? So black, such a black question. Can you jump from the ground straight up to the apron? And, like, I'm a volleyball player, right? So yeah, I got a vertical. I was like, oh yeah, for sure. And so he went on to say, okay, great, do you think you can wrestle barefoot? And I'm thinking, like, what? Isn't that like a Samoan gimmick? Or, you know, but, you know, there's other ethnic groups.
What are you supposed
that
to be
have
in
had
the
to wrestle
or something?
It gets better. So this is now 2006 now. So then he says, okay, great. So, and he actually compared it to Bobby Lashley. He said, you know how Bobby Lashley jumped straight up? Can you do that? And then can you do it with no shoes? He's like, perfect. He's like, all right, so we got a character for you. And he went on to elaborate about this character. And it was a female, like a Shaka Zulu, like a female witch doctor. They were talking about the gentleman, Jody Hamilton, that was over Deep South. He actually had me discussing with him going to a witchcraft store, buying powders and potions and coming out blowing fire barefoot. And so when I was talking to Ricky Steamboat, now I was looking for other Christians in the business, and I knew that he was known as one, you know? So when he got done telling me about this voodoo, and I'm sitting here thinking, like, wait a minute, like, I'm truly here to, like, inspire young girls. I'm thinking about all the young, like, black girls that are going to be watching this. And, like, this, I was like, this is not right. Not just the black girls, but, you know, those are the ones that are really going to be focusing, like, wow. Because at that point in time, there was only a handful of black women that had ever been signed by WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just completely mind blowing. So I said to him, and I guess this is a no-no, but, you know, everyone knows me as they don't know the whole story, but they do know that I just don't go with the flow, especially if the flow is flowing to hell. I'm just not going with you. I'm sorry. Yeah. And so I said to Ricky, even though back then I was like, I was just simply like your textbook Christian, you know, like I didn't have any I had spiritual depth and I knew about spiritual warfare. So, like, I don't play with witchcraft, Ouija boards, demons, or anything like that. Like, I don't mess around. I don't dabble in the dark arts, even if I'm pretending to. Like, if I've got to walk into a witchcraft store to get my gimmick, you know, like, that's not right. And so I said, wait, I thought you were a Christian. And he just kind of looked at me. And I was like, well, what about the kids watching? And I just got, like, a blank stare. And, yeah, so that was not, I mean, I didn't feel any type of, like, I didn't feel uncomfortable saying that to him, but looking back on it, I think he was pretty shocked. And I think that the whole mindset of that industry is, like, take what we give you, and if you don't like it, like, we'll replace you type thing.
Yeah.
And then also, like, there was a description of the entrance given to me, and I was going to be coming out to the ring with one wrestler and his boyfriend, and I was supposed to be, we were going to shock the crowd because the crowd was going to think I was with the wrestler, and then the wrestler was going to kiss the guy, and I was like, what? I was like, no. Like, I had heard about people turning down gimmicks before, and I'm like, what are you doing? You're crazy. Like, you've been working so hard. You've been doing 1,000, like, crunches, 1,000 sit-ups, and 1,000 squats every day just to warm up, and then practice starts after that. And you're going to turn down an opportunity to walk through those curtains. And, like, going through Deep South, the only thing that kept me going is I just kept visualizing myself coming through those curtains, you know. And that's all I was seeing, like, no matter how much pain I was in. You know, I don't know if any of you guys listening or if you, Chris, have ever tried to run the ropes for 3 minutes straight and then 2 minutes straight and then 1 minute straight. That's brutal. And I'm coming straight out of Florida State University conditioning, and I am, like, literally everything in me, I can't even feel the burn anymore because it's too bad. My brain can't register it. Mm-hmm. And I was just picturing myself that day when I debuted, when I walked through that curtain and walked out that ramp and saw all those fans out there on Raw. And, like, that was my goal, and that was what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And then they hit me with this voodoo bisexual relationship threesome gimmick. And I just remember immediately just being like, are you serious? Yeah, not my, no, that's not the vision. Even though I didn't know why I was saying no, I didn't have a full, like, revelation, but my spirit knew that that was not right. And it didn't even come up, oh, I could maybe be released, or, you know, what if I don't get another chance? And actually, the Shane twins, if you guys remember them, the Gemini, I was their valet at Deep South. Yeah, I was their valet at Deep South, and they got called up to TV without me, and I was just kind of like, what's going on, you know? And then they came to me with this. The devil made his offer. I'm not calling Ricky Steamboat the devil, by the way. Let me just make that clear. It's the spirits working behind the industry. Like, they made me this offer, and it didn't taste right. I was a Christian that was, like, living in sin back then, you know? Like, I had a boyfriend, and we were having premarital sex, and I was going out drinking, and, you know, I was saying bad things about people, even though I felt justified.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, you know, I wasn't living the life I live today. And still, you know, thank God for the Holy Spirit. I thank Him so much because, you know, I something in me just, like, I wasn't even probably me speaking. I was like, I thought you were a Christian. Like, what about society? They're going to see this.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. As you were talking, I kept thinking about the scripture where profit a man, you know, the gain of the world will lose his soul, you know? So yeah, very, very interesting stuff right there. Certainly I think, and I commend you for your loyalty to something much greater than, a wrestling gimmick. So,
yeah,
for sure.
But I'm just saying it's mind-boggling because I was doing everything else wrong, right, at the time. But I guess that was, like, my crossroads, like my turning point.
Sometimes it takes
the decision
that
I had to make. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it takes that. So yeah, a few questions before we close this part. I definitely see a part two of you being on the show, maybe a part three or four.
I know I'm a little long-winded, right?
No, but listen, it was a great, great story, though. Let's address a few of these questions. Andre asks, what are you up to these days, Con?
You said his name's Andre?
Andre, yes.
Hey, Andre. These days, I am a mother of two beautiful children. I'm currently actually actively advocating for women who have suffered the tragedy of domestic violence or sexual assault, and not only just those women, but men as well. I'm helping to reform lives through the living word of God. I have presented my life as a living testimony. I have crossed into the promised land, and there are some giants in the land, of course, as the scripture says, and I'm doing what the scripture says to do regarding that. And beyond that, nothing else matters what I'm doing as far as my perspective is.
Yeah, very humble. Mike asks, what is your favorite breakfast food?
Oh my goodness. You know, I am so horrible because I skip breakfast so much. Let me think. My favorite breakfast food is probably pizza.
That's a pretty cool.
Hey, Alex, to be honest, pizza, I warm it up. Like, but there's this establishment here. I'm not in Florida right now. I want to send prayers that way, and every person in Florida that's listening,
yes,
you guys get out of there, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, just to forewarn you, but I was thinking about Hungry Howie's, and which is a Florida spot. And
we have it here in Ohio too.
Oh, you guys have it in Ohio? Well, I found a place here in El Paso, and it's called Speedy's Pizza. I have to plug them. One of my friends, he's a local wrestler around here. He was like saying he deleted Pizza Hut for Domino's or something like that out of his phone. And I was like, no, you know, like Speedy's Pizza made me delete all of them. Speedy's is bae, you know. So if you guys ever come to El Paso, you guys got to hit up Speedy's Pizza. Just a little plug there.
Speedy's Pizza in El Paso.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking of Texas, I know that you are a few hours away from Houston, but definitely our prayers are with Houston still. I know, you know, that's as a journalist, it's sad because something is on, you know, stories have a lifespan, you know, in the media, but that doesn't mean
it's
over in real life. You know what I mean? So,
it's nowhere near over.
Yeah. So our prayers are definitely still with Houston, even with, you know, even with just the people, all the charities, all the people coming together, is absolutely amazing. And just I just heard a number last week of there's going to be like $100-something billion, of damages that they have to repair. You know, so
yeah, you know, like the deeper thing on the Houston topic and what's happening in the tropics, in the Caribbean, headed up to Florida right now. No amount of money is going to fix the real problem that's going on. Like, what needs to happen? Like, they can rebuild the city. They can clean up all the water. They can replace all those material things that people need to have their souls restored. I see so many people talking about the things that they've lost. These people are talking. That's what they don't understand. The death toll in Houston, speaking about lifespan and media cycles and things like that, they are not even actually reporting how many people have actually died. I lived in Houston back in 2013. I had went down there to start training again at Booker T School, and I made a ton of friends in Houston. My 5-year-old has friends there. One of my personal friends in Houston, when they said that the death toll was around like third, like no, the death toll had only been 5 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now up beyond 30. But let me just tell you, like, my friend alone knows five people who died, and none of their names are mentioned in those five. So think about that. It's so prophetic. I know we're going to need to do another, we're going to have another talk either off air or on, but everybody in America, everybody needs to wake up. You know, people are focused on things like entertainment. We're glued to the E! Channel and college football, and people are dying, and we don't care. Our ears are plugged. Our eyes are closed. You know, my platform, which I didn't intend to take, I had no view of this. Like, my dream was that I was going to be a WWE superstar. I didn't ever think that I'd be working in the field that I am now, advocating raising awareness for sexual assault and domestic violence and helping people to fight for their rights. That was nowhere on my radar. I was so selfish back then, self-absorbed. Like, I went, like, that whole, like, me, I got to do this type society. Like, everybody needs to open their eyes. I don't think anybody really understands what's happening right now. And I think we all need to take a – this is a time for us to take a look inside and truly inspect our own hearts. Because, you know, our hearts are wicked. Our hearts mislead us. The world tells us to follow our heart, and that is not scriptural. The Bible says not to follow your heart because it's wicked and deceitful. We need to tap into our spirit, and we need to restore our soul. Everybody needs a soul checkup. I got to do one every single day. Like, every single day I've got to check myself. I catch myself slipping at points in time. Sometimes I have strong days. But this is a wake-up call. And if you, Chris, you're friends with me on Facebook, you see me every day posting, like, I don't know if you caught on, but, like, I'm speaking to myself. You understand? Like, I'm not preaching or condemning anyone else. Like, there are things, there are words that I get, words of wisdom, words of knowledge, words of revelation that I get. But God's not going to give anybody a revelation that you haven't conquered yourself or that you don't need to check into yourself, you know? So
a lot of times he does that. That's the thing.
Right.
Like, I've been in ministry for 18 years now. And, you know, when I share wisdom and when I share nuggets, I better retain some of those and use them for myself. Otherwise, sometimes, the enemy can use that as far as, like, me, you know, a sense of haughtiness or pride or, you know, just and just an ability to think, you know, kind of highly over other people. Like, you know, listen, man, you.
The sneaky thing about that is you also come. What also creeps in is, like, you think you have a right to hold something against someone.
Certainly.
Like, if someone wrongs you, you feel justified in in holding a grudge. And that's the reason so many people are not getting to where they're supposed to be, and they're stuck on one level. It's a chain that holds you back, and it's called unforgiveness. I see so many people, and I'm, you know, I'm honestly tired of hearing all the Trump hate. Why are we so focused on what Donald Trump is doing and not focused on what we're doing? There's people wishing death upon this man. My pastor of almost 9 years, she endorsed Trump. And I'm going to tell you, when she did endorse Trump, I picked up my phone during the preliminaries and the debates. And I was, like, about to call her office in Orlando and ask them to remove me as a member. I was like, she lost her mind, you know? And then I remembered something she preached in a book she wrote, like, I think in 1998, where she was talking about her relationship with Donald Trump and how it all started. And everything she said in her endorsement speech was identical to what she wrote like 10 years ago. And so if it wasn't for the Holy Spirit, and I got to plug Paula White. I'm praying for her. There's some things about her that have led me away from her a lot. And then, like, every time I decide I have something against her, because maybe I catch her violating a scripture or a principle, I'm like, okay, you're wrong. I gotta go. Like, the Holy Spirit checks me and tells me literally, like, you need to listen to her, because let me tell you guys something. And I know you guys want to get into this topic, but let me tell you how my life was saved, and we can go into the backstory next time. But I was sitting on the couch in the living room in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I was always watching like Daystar, TBN, and all those Christian networks, and just flipping back between the 4 or 5 cluster that they have right there. And I had just turned off like Joyce Meyer or Joel Osteen or something like that, and I was trying to flip to another channel because I didn't want to watch the commercials, and I caught the credits. And in the credits, and I'm sitting in Pittsburgh in my house at the time, I'm sitting in Pittsburgh, and I see an address on Dale Mabry Avenue in Tampa. And it was literally like at that moment something clicked, and like God said, go get out of here and go there. And when I drove my 2000 Jeep Grand Cherokee from Pittsburgh down to Florida, crashed on my friend's couch, woke up the next morning, which was a Sunday morning, and I went to church. I'm going to tell you, that was Paula White's address to Without Walls. I had no idea who she was. I had never listened to her preach before. When I was a child, I remember like glancing and hearing my family playing it in the background, but I had already been in church all day. You know how black people like go to church and they go home and they turn church back on again, right? And I remember looking at her thinking like, why is she trying to talk black? Like, that's so weird. Like, and then that's all I remember from my childhood. And then I sit in her church and like literally I was blown away that I had no idea what she was talking about. And she's preaching out of the same Bible that I had this whole time. And so I just want to say, like, people need to be careful what they say about people. Like I said, back at Deep South, my mouth used to like run, and I used to talk about what people did to me, and I felt justified in doing so because there were some really disgusting things that were going on. But it's not what other people do. It's your reaction to it. You know, I've had close family members call me and say, oh, she's tripping now, you know, and then like another close family member, and I'm talking about immediate family, a few years ago, they're like, oh, you know what she did? She took that black woman's church. And I'm like, you guys need to, like, you don't understand. Like, all of us have a personal journey that we go on. And I'm not surprised that the pastor that God led me to go and sit in her church, I had no idea any of this gossip about her or whatever, now ends up being a spiritual advisor for our president of the United States. And Donald Trump, for all you Christians out there, if you're talking against Donald Trump and you can't pray for him too, you got to pick one. Like, you can't bash him and then pray for him. Like, hold your tongue and turn in the scripture and study King Cyrus. That's all I got to say. God raises up rulers and he appoints kings. So yeah. I'm going to just leave it right there.
I like that. You got to choose one. Very interesting stuff. Well, Trenisha, my friend, thank you so much for joining the show tonight. Very interesting. I feel a part two in my spirit. So.
yeah, I know, right? Yeah, I think I'm feeling it too.
Yeah, nice. So we got to resume it. Thanks so much, Trenisha. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh yeah, no problem. Thanks, you guys have a good.
Wow! Good stuff. Trenisha Biggers, a.k.a. Raka Khan. Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining the show. Thank you so much for just some inspiration. Yeah, Tony, wow. Very, very true. Good stuff, man. I really, really appreciate it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into the show. Without further ado, let's bring on the co-host for this evening and the co-host for every evening, the co-host with the most, the best co-host there is, the best co-host there was, the best co-host there ever will be. Without further ado, Evan Tech Proud, how are you tonight, sir?
Hey, brother, what's going on? Feeling nice. How you feeling?
I'm feeling great, man. How about Khan? How about Trenisha Biggers? How about the formerly Raka Khan? How about that, man?
Yeah, it was great. I had no idea. She, it's funny because I thought about her a couple weeks ago when, you know, we work on getting guests, and she was somebody that did drop on my spirit, and it was good to see today. You was talking off air. You sent me the run sheet that you had to interview on. I thought it was great. You know, I didn't know. You know, I didn't know that she was a believer like we are, and it was just great to hear, you know, her stand on, you know, living for the world, living for the word and living for the Lord and just being steadfast in how she feels and how she lives. So it was very refreshing to hear someone talk about the faith and living for God through being a professional wrestler, even a professional athlete. That's legit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see a lot of pro wrestlers over the years, they proclaim the gospel and they proclaim, oh, you know, I'm a Christian and I'm a minister. And the next thing you know, two to three weeks later, a month later, they back to living how they was before.
Yeah.
And it makes us look bad. So we get to see that she's legit. And, of course, you know, the GOAT, you know, Sting and, you know, Michaels and, you know,
mm-hmm.
Million Dollar Man. And,
yep.
And we get to know that there are still a few out here that are legit.
Yeah.
And I can't forget my deceased brother, a good friend of mine too, Ivan Koloff, was one.
Yep.
You know,
boy,
for the Lord. And
gotta give a plug to my boy, Marty Elias, man. That's my
guy. Yeah, can't forget Marty.
Absolutely.
Yeah, can't forget Marty, and we can't forget our brother,
Lance
brother
Boyd.
Bobby Fulton.
Brother Bobby.
Bobby Fulton.
Yeah.
Brother Bobby, our good personal friend, and Lance Hoyt, who I haven't interviewed yet, but we did talk a good while in Dallas years ago, the weekend of Mania. So,
yeah,
Lance seems like he's about like 9 feet tall.
Yeah.
Even though he's not.
Right. Good stuff, man. Like you said, very refreshing. All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's get to the headlines. Here we go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. He speaking of God, it's a miracle that the Nature Boy is back and in action. He's going through some recovery, but you know, a lot of people call it a miracle. I mean, it was a routine checkup, and then it became very, very bad. Some bowel issues, from what I heard. Some kidney issues, from what I heard as well. So it was some critical stuff, and that's led to a successful surgery, but that went to, you know, the successful surgery still was, they still were saying that it's going to take a lot of time, the recovery time is going to be a lot, but, you know, he cut a promo, you know, and and it, you know, he's selling merchandise already because of his recovery. I ain't dead yet, and then an expletive after that. But yeah, he's selling merch. Ric Flair is still up and still at it. You know, talk about your, you know, 9 lives, man. Ric Flair, he better look to the heels.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, I saw that. He, you know, he lost, of course, you know, visibly you would lose weight. You know, he already doing promos and everything, so
yeah, man.
I'm glad he made it on through.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just pray for this guy. Pray for his continued recovery.
Yep.
That's what matters.
Absolutely. JBL, your boy, your favorite.
Jibble.
Man. Yeah, your favorite. He resigned as a, you know, for a good cause though. Some charitable work. He's got a charity. I believe he, any day above ground is a good day. Very true. Very true. Great comment there. So JBL, he, stepped down. He, from what I was told and what Tom Phillips said tonight on SmackDown, there's some charity work that he's been doing for a while, and he made a statement about it as well. The charity's expanding, so he decided to focus more on that. You know, reports, he said he's still within the WWE family, so there's reports that are saying that, you know, he will most likely commentate like Mania and Tribute to the Troops, because that's something he created. So most likely, and that usually happens around December time. So most likely we'll see him back in December. Most likely we'll see him back in Mania. There's been some goings on as far as just, you know, some comments as far as saying that it had kind of something to do with Ronaldo. I, I doubt it. It could, but I doubt it though.
It would have been if it was about Morrow, then the him resigning would have happened way earlier.
Yeah, because Ronaldo's been back for a couple months now. So,
he's been back for a couple months, so I'm with you. Nothing to do with that, but
yeah, I doubt it. Yeah, absolutely. So, well, you know, best wishes to the charity. Hope best with that. Curt Hawkins, definitely want to comment about Curt Hawkins, man. This guy has made, I think it's funny. We'll address the SmackDown questions on here as well. But posting your questions, I see some SmackDown questions. We'll get to that when we get to the Raw and SmackDown preview. I think Curt Hawkins is hilarious. This guy makes a gimmick out of losing. He had a 100 match losing streak. Finn Balor even said something about it, and you know he's talking about how it improves the star factory, and it's just absolutely hilarious. And then he gets eliminated last week on Raw, and this guy sends a tweet that had a split shot of him being hoisted up to be eliminated from the battle royal. So when Bret Hart won
WrestleMania 10,
he was hoisted up. It was just absolutely hilarious, man. This guy, you know, it's funny. I think Matt Morgan said this one time. He was talking about how if somebody's getting dealt a bad hand, you know, in their spot, as far as, you know, whatever their spot is in the WWE, if someone's getting dealt a bad hand, you know, make the best out of it still, you know. And I think paraphrasing what he said, but basically that's, you know, the gist of what he said. And I think it's hilarious because, like, this guy, Curt Hawkins, is he's like the modern day Iron Mike Sharp, you know, the modern day Barry Horowitz. You know what I mean?
It's
like this guy used to be a tag team champion, and now he is just on a matter. It's like he keeps losing. He loses every single time. But the funny thing is, he's made a gimmick into losing so much, and that's what makes him different than someone like a Dolph Ziggler or Ty Dillinger or like a Sami Zayn. The reason why I think that he's different than those people is because it's kind of sad to see like Sami Zayn losing every week. You know, just like, you know, tonight he lost against Aiden English in like a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then he had a nerve to like chase him, you know, up the ramp, which made him look even worse. And so now, here's the thing. What's so funny about Curt Hawkins is that, like, we know he's going to lose, but he spins it. Like, my major, my undergrad's in PR, so I know all about spinning. You know, I know from a PR standpoint, you know, it's like spinning is like a big taboo. But we understand what spinning is. We understand how to make it work, you know. And it's like for Curt Hawkins, he makes it work. The guy is absolutely hilarious. The Star Factory gimmick is awesome.
He is.
Here's my projection. This is what I hope for Curt Hawkins. I think it would be absolutely hilarious, especially since, you know, Bobby Roode, you know, they've came up. You know, Shinsuke Nakamura came up this year. Ty Dillinger came up this year. But Dillinger was losing a lot, and mostly all the time in NXT as well. But, you know, Bobby Roode just came up, and, you know, there's still some needs. Oh, good question about the Christmas Raw. We'll address it here in a moment, Steve. You know, but I think Curt Hawkins, because he was – for a hiccup, he went back to NXT this year for like a match or two. And I think that Curt Hawkins should be in NXT. I think he should be one of the top guys in NXT with the whole Star Factory gimmick. I think it would be absolutely hilarious. I would absolutely love it. I really would. Yeah. You know, he's doing well on Raw. I think it's funny, but I think they really need to go with this gimmick, this Star Factory gimmick.
You got to make the most of what you got.
Yeah.
And whatever they give you, I know talking to Scott Hall, and me, you've either done, I don't know, between us, hundreds of interviews between the 4 or 5 years that we've done our shows respectively apiece.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear it said, if you're given a gimmick, you got to make the most of it. If you don't put your 100% and don't believe in it, it's not going to work.
Yeah, people aren't going to.
We've seen the time, yeah, tonight. And you look at Dusty with the polka dots. See, that was a raid from Vince, and Dusty made it work because he's Dusty.
That's right.
And then look at the Red Rooster with Terry Taylor. And it's. And like you said, it's great. I loved it. I think it's hilarious. And I didn't see the tweet. I've been told about the tweet, but it was hilarious that he's doing it. I see, hey,
hilarious.
Give him his own title, bro, and do the reverse where you have to, you know how you win the title, just make it so you lose. And
if
he does
loses,
everything he does to lose. He retains it right. And if he wins, he loses it. So it's like the reverse championship. Or
that would be, yes, the reverse championship. The reversed heavyweight championship. That would be hilarious. If he loses it, he retains.
Right.
If he wins, he loses.
That
would be
reverse rules.
That would be absolutely
great.
So the last headline for tonight is the Undertaker, as our boy Teddy Long would say. One on one with the Undertaker. Man, listen, you know, you and I were sitting side by side in Orlando this April 2nd, and, you know, I was one of the only people who was cheering for Roman Reigns at the time. The Undertaker is in my top, top seven all time. It was just... Roman Reigns was the perfect person to beat him. Roman Reigns is the guy, you know, and Vince has made that very clear. So I think, and you could tell, you know, the very fact that Taker wanted it, you know, it became a main event match. I almost positive that was Taker's doing, because there was talks that it was going to be Goldberg Lesnar. And so, but yeah, I mean, Taker Roman being the main event for the evening, I definitely think that was Taker's doing. Taker putting him over. Of course, Taker has some of the biggest pull in the entire WWE, so Taker would have, you know, that type of say so as far as putting him over. And that was, you know, Taker, he gave back to the business, as they say. Give back to the business. I really don't understand that too much, because if you're wrestling for 20 years, that means you're making money for the company. So you're really giving back every single time you're in the ring, and you risk your body. The old saying, give back to the business. You know, he put Roman Reigns over. I mean, I understand why they say that, because people become, you know, big stars and stuff like that. So put someone over, give back. But a lot of times, I mean, like The Undertaker, I mean, he really had to really embrace his gimmick in order for it to really get over, for people to get into it. So I don't want to see him back, man. You know, there were reports I put on WrestleZone. There were reports, PW Insider reported that he was working out before, you know, the cameras came on and before the audience and the crowd came at SummerSlam. You know, there's some reports that we may see Cena Taker at Mania, or we may see Cena Taker at Survivor Series to bump up the hype for Survivor Series. It's usually the worst of the big four pay-per-views as far as buy rate is concerned. So they're trying to hype it up, just like last year they hyped it up with, 2 years ago they hyped it up with, what was it, Sting, or what was it, the, Sting debut, Sting debuted, what, in 4, 13. Yeah, it was 14.
Yeah, 14.
Yeah, and then 15. There was a big match with 15 too, Survivor Series. I don't remember.
Yeah, Goldberg and Lesnar was Survivor Series as well.
That was 16. For anyone listening, what was Survivor Series? Survivor Series 2015. What was the main event?
That was Undertaker. That was the whole 20 years.
Survivor
Series. Undertaker and Kane against the Wyatts.
Yeah, that's right. That wasn't very good. Yeah. that was kind of dumb.
I'm sorry, that was stupid.
Yeah, but at least last year was good with Goldberg and Lesnar. That was really good. So they want to bump it up this year. So they're thinking of Cena, Taker. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with Taker. If they do Taker, I don't want to see Taker at Mania again. I really don't want to see Taker at all again ever, really. But if they do it, listen, if they do Cena Taker, I don't want to see Cena beat Taker because he already had his send-off at Mania. I think this would really be a fantastic way to really end Taker's career. He started at Survivor Series. He ends at Survivor Series. He already had his send-off for Mania as if that was his last Mania. I'm okay with that. If you do it at Survivor Series, you just have to make sure that really is Taker's last match. And Cena beating Taker right after. And here's the thing. If Cena really wants to live out his promos, you know, and it's funny that Cena talks about Roman Reigns as being like a machine-made person. Every time Cena says that last week, I'm like, you were the exact same thing. Like when you started in 2002 with all the ruthless aggression and all the multicolored tights and boots, you were the company machine guy. Like so,
that background music.
Yeah.
Background music.
Yeah. You were the same position. And you know, the first few years of Cena's career, I'd say probably the first 3 years, he was still trying to find himself. I mean, really, 2003, when he became World Life and was feuded with Taker and Guerrero.
In the cuff jeans.
Yeah. That, you know, people were kind of like, okay, he can rap. But it didn't take long at all for people to stop being interested in Cena. So that's what I really didn't understand about that promo. But I will say, we'll get to Raw here in a moment. You know, Roman Reigns did have some really good comebacks this week because really it seemed like he wasn't a part of the script. Like last week, it seems like he was all just about all script until he started flipping out. But
yeah,
this week it seemed like he had a script, but he had those ad libs too, which was really good. We'll get to that in a minute. But what are your thoughts on Taker coming back? Should he even come back?
I'm like you. If I don't see Taker anymore, I'll be fine. We was there to see Taker's air quote send off, or if he does come back, I guess it'll be the pregame show to the send off, and
right.
If he does come back, it'll be the legit venue send off. But you make a good point about if you do Cena Taker, and that's the one match we never got to see when both of them were in that prime. And again,
right.
We saw Cena and Taker feedback on like 03-04. Like I know I sent you to Bosh when Taker's bike stopped. It was at Vengeance. and Cena and Taker had that mini feud, and I really don't count it because he wasn't Super Cena. He was still on the rise. But when Taker was, you know, Taker's always Taker, and now Cena's Super Cena, Captain Four Kids, they never actually had a feud. So if they did do it, I agree with what you're saying, make it a Survivor Series and just end it. But, on you know, as you know, on a business standpoint, as our background, Vince still needs that big money match.
Yep.
He's going to need that. And something my staff member Toph mentioned, we was talking off air after our show last week, is he was like, you know, I don't think Taker's done. And if he was there to think about it, they keep mentioning Taker, and Roman Reigns continues to mention Taker on live events. And Cena even mentioned a little snippet last week about, well, I'm not a you know, old man or whatever it was he was saying. He kind of took a shot at Taker.
Yeah.
And Taker was on the airplane and Taker was
bad
at old man. So it's all these little hints that Taker could come back. The streak ended in New Orleans. And if Taker comes back in New Orleans, then it's the whole market boy. You know, the streak ended. He's coming back. What are they going to do? And sad to say, you know, we never got to see Taker against Sting. So
we're not going to see it again. We're not going to see Taker Sting. We're not going to see Taker Sting.
It's a must to see, darling.
No, we are not going to see Taker.
But if we did, and I said that, if he does come back, I mean, it's the big money match. It has to be. I mean, I say people don't talk about this. Taker's never feuded with Jericho, a legit feud with Jericho, and I would love to see Taker
on and off.
They never had a legit feud, but.
Mm-hmm.
If he has one more match, Air Court, and it's the legit send off, you can do Taker Cena. There will be tons of money.
Not at Mania.
Full Mania.
Because to me, it's like if Cena beats Taker, that, I mean, talk about, because, you know, Roman talked about, you know, Cena, you know, burying people. That would be a way of Cena burying talent, though. Because Roman Reigns defeating the Undertaker is the perfect way for him to get over. He got over. I mean, the writers did a terrible job really keeping that momentum. The day after, he said four words and he had more heat than Vicky Guerrero, and so it's like, but you know, weeks afterwards he gets mauled by Braun Strowman. It just killed his momentum. It was so terrible.
Pretty good.
But here's my thing, though.
It didn't really help
Roman, though. It didn't really help Roman. Roman helped It made him look like throughout.
Right.
It made him initially made him look fantastic. I mean, like he was super over. But it's like he's starting to get, you know, so many people spend so much time talking about how Roman Reigns, you know, is this and that. I made a very controversial article about that a couple of weeks ago about the hard facts about hating Roman Reigns, quote, hating Roman Reigns. But, you know, the funny part of that is, you know, and I gave all the stats, you know, it's like, since, you know, the past 5 months now, Roman Reigns does not look like a bigger star than he did before he beat Taker. Initially, yes, but now, no, because I think that Strowman really took over, you know, his type of stardom. And I credit that to I credit a lot of that to Roman Reigns, as far as Reigns putting him over and the matches that they have. Strowman, you know, he's probably the MVP of 2017. But people don't want to give that to Roman Reigns. People don't want to give that type of credibility to Roman Reigns because people want to put themselves over and find anything to say wrong about Roman Reigns. And if you like Roman Reigns, you might as well just love death. So it's like
it's the same thing with Cena. Reigns is the new Cena. Is it the same thing people did with Cena a few years ago? In a way, meaning that the only comparison is that he's the golden boy, he's the chosen one. WWE is going to shove it down your throat if you like it or not.
But here's
the
thing,
fans are going to resent it.
Here's the thing with Cena. This is the reason why I don't think a Reigns and Cena comparison is justifiable. Yes, you know, and here's the funny thing about that, too. If anything, Braun Strowman's the golden boy, because Braun Strowman is in the exact same spot as Roman Reigns is. He is a WWE manufactured product that is being pushed to the moon. I mean, that's what people are complaining about. But this same exact thing is happening with Braun Strowman. But people want to, you know.
But Right, but the difference is, though, it's WWE. This ain't the NWA. This isn't Mid-South. This not WCCW. The reason why I say it, back then, they put anybody on top. Media-wise, it was wrestling. This is WWE. So, yeah, Strowman, it theoretically is in that same spot. Reigns is more compared with the Cena because of the media and marketing. They're not going to market as heavy, and they're not going to push as much media and PR behind Strowman as the other Reigns, because Reigns is a lit. So that's why, for me, right. So even if he wasn't, that's why, for me, I see Reigns is a little bit more comparison for Cena, only because we're on the media side of PR, because Reigns is attractive, and the girls like him, and the women like him, and, you know, dad of the year.
But why should that be... Why should that be a detriment to Roman Reigns if he works hard?
Oh, it's not. I'm just saying, for the IWC,
what I'm saying.
You know, they said, yeah.
A lot of people,
it's not his fault.
Right. Exactly. That's what
if
I don't understand.
If he was in rain shoes, you would take it and eat it up.
Sure would.
Anybody would take it and eat it up.
Exactly.
If you look at the time period,
he's got a
choke. But I guess we can compare Jones to Cena too. Everybody's comparing him to Cena. Vince was in his office, But like I said, you know, two different generations. I told you, you can't compare Hogan and Austin. You can't compare Austin and Cena or Bret or San Martino. I mean, they're the big stars. But it's two totally different time periods, two totally different generations, two totally different fan bases. And, you know, and like you said with Strowman, and we'll get to Raw in a second. Like you said, Strowman is being pushed to the moon. And he's main eventing Raw.
Yes, he main evented Raw.
Speaking of
Raw, let's get right into Raw. What are your thoughts on Raw for this week?
I saw about 80% of Raw, and what I missed really wasn't that much. I enjoyed Raw. It was good. I don't remember the last time. Well, I'm tech, so pretty much I could figure it out. But it's been a long time since Captain 4K started Raw off. And I like how they're doing it where Cena isn't main eventing. And like I said before, give Vince credit. The IWC and fans complaining Vince lost his touch. Vince doesn't know what he's doing, blah, blah, blah. What is Vince doing with Raw?
Yeah.
Every week when you watch Raw, and I said this a lot of time on my show, you don't know with Raw what's going to be the main event. Vince changes the main event up on a regular. It could be the women's title. It could be Strowman against Apollo Crews. Last night was Strowman against Big Show in the cage. A few weeks ago was Cena and Reigns, or what I call Batman and Superman, against The Miz to Raw. So I like how Raw isn't predictable, as of we don't know what's going to make of that. They play around with it, which I enjoy. But I thought Raw was good. I enjoyed the opening match with Jason Jordan, Rick Steiner in a way. I always call him the Rick Steiner and Chad Gable Scott. I enjoyed Jason Steiner against Cena. Reigns promo was, I like he had quick comebacks, and he got off script. You really got to see, you know, you could go for either or. The cage match, I definitely loved it. Two big monsters, It was Godzilla against Mechagodzilla. It was Godzilla against Rodan, and it was just, I really enjoyed it. I really did enjoy Raw.
I agree.
You know, Jeff Hardy leads into the Miz, and I'm kind of seeing down the line the Hardy boys. They're already inside. Needs to say, you know, they're already going to build something up with Hardy and Finn Balor for a singles feud. Finn Balor has to weigh about 110 pounds on TV. I like how, and one thing I don't get, this man, Finn Balor is going to face Bray Wyatt at No Mercy, man to man. What is the difference? Really, is that? Don't even get me started. What, really?
I don't want the dude, man. You know, I want the man. Like, what? I mean, that is a terrible way to extend a feud.
Oh,
I mean, a terrible way. Like, I just... To me, it just seems like Bray Wyatt just... I don't know what it is about him, but he just doesn't work with so many feuds.
And Bray Wyatt, he's the king of phantom feuds, because his feuds never end. What happened to the feud, Bray Wyatt? You had with Ryback for like 2 weeks. Or what happened to that? What happened
Seth
to the
Rollins
feud you had with Ziggler?
Moment.
Oh, yeah, Seth Rollins for a moment. Then you feed it with Balor, but then that stopped.
Chris Jericho for a month.
Right, Chris Jericho. Then, Balor's feeding with Dave Matthews Band and Elias. But then that kind of feeds up. It's like, what is going on? It's not Bray's fault. It's WWE creative. It's,
certainly.
Not to be funny, I hope when Rusev leaves WWE and Ziggler, I'd be glad when Bray can leave WWE and go to ROH or New Japan or forbid we even say the Anthem Isle of Impact featuring
O-W-L.
Anthem.
O-W-L.
It used to be TNA, whatever you call it. Somewhere where Bray really could experiment his creativity because he's like that villain in comic books. He's like that joke villain where he pops up and then, you know, okay, he's here. It's like they did Scarecrow. They made Scarecrow in the Dark Knight trilogy a joke character. Scarecrow could be legit. And then next thing you know, Scarecrow pops up as a judge, and it's like, oh, he's a gag character. That's what Bray is. Nobody fears him. No one cares. He has random blood. You know, he's giving people random blood baths, which makes no sense.
Yeah.
What happened to the little kids he had possessed? You don't see any of that no more. But it's the Force and the rocking chair. There's so much stuff that makes no sense.
Sister Abigail gets burned up, and her spirit gets burned up, and then all of a sudden her spirit goes in Bray Wyatt. It's just...
Or it commits larceny.
Yeah.
Or it commits arsony. Then they fight in like a little cottage house.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, just terrible. I thought Raw was decent. Miz and Jeff Hardy, I think that was good. I think Jeff Hardy was the perfect person to put over the Miz. I think it was a good match. You know, Jeff Hardy going as a singles, I really don't see that. The unfortunate part of that is I kind of think that they're going toward the Dudleys type of run now. And it's been 5 months. A lot of people are saying, you know, they were waiting for the broken, but it's just a stalemate with OWL. And, you know, it doesn't seem like it's going to end. I like the Woken alternative, you know, that's a good alternate, but, and he's starting to cut those type of promos now, which is good. Just because regular Matt Hardy was just no good. I mean, it was just a nostalgia pop that only lasted a few weeks, and people were waiting for just the broken Matt. So hopefully we'll see that soon. Cena and Jordan was good. Cena, people giving Cena a lot of credit on this one, man. He made Jordan look good because, you know, it was a good match. I kind of wish it was promoted a little more than like a couple hours before the show. It seems like they kind of pulled the plug on Jason Jordan, like as far as just making him, you know, you hardly ever see, you know, references on Raw of him and Angle anymore. It's just that, you know, he hasn't won consistently anymore. So, I mean, I don't know. It just seems like they're kind of losing stock with him, losing interest, which is it's unfortunate. But it just seems like I said, I think the angle with him and I think the storyline with him and Angle is DOA anyways. Strowman and Big Show was good. There were some talks that Show was kind of healing some nagging injury, so he's been being written off, which was a good way to write him off. As far as SmackDown is concerned, Carmella and Ellsworth thing is just the weirdest thing in the world. You know, it's just like I don't get it. I don't get it. She dumps him, and then backstage later on in the show, She makes up with him and kisses him and slaps him. And it's just like, you're doing things my way now. And I'm like, okay, so this is odd. Especially since there was a tweet that just came out that I reported on WrestleZone of her and real-life boyfriend Big Cass buying a house, their first house. So, very odd. Like I already mentioned, Aiden English and Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn, sad. I mean, I don't know what the heck they're trying to do with Sami Zayn. I really think he should go back to NXT. I really do. I mean, there's nothing going on with him. He's just...
Yeah, what is he doing?
He's just losing to Aiden English, you know, every week. It seems like, you know, he lost to Mike Bennett, you know, a time or two. And it's just like there's nothing going on with him nowadays. The Shane McMahon saga, I think it's kind of cool. It seems like we're going to get Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens, which, you know, I'll report it.
Which we saw down the line.
Yeah. I mean, I reported that some weeks ago. There were some talks of it happening at SummerSlam, but he ended up getting which I'm cool with that because it didn't. It seemed like the point they don't want it to be overshadowed, which I can respect that. To have it at a minor pay per view has, you know, gives it a more big fight feel, which I'm cool with. Real quick, the question about the Raw going live on Christmas Day and New Year's Day, I think that's a terrible idea. Terrible, terrible idea. Should have did some tapings on the weekend. There's a lot of talk going on with that. You know, people are blaming Vince McMahon. And then, you know, there's some talks that there was a network type of thing. And, of course, you know, Vince has to make the network feel good and make them happy. So, regardless of what it is, you know, them traveling on Christmas Day and New Year's Day to me is just a terrible idea. I mean, it's not going to be a difference in ratings because they taped it the weekend prior. Holiday episodes are usually the weakest episodes of the year. Yeah, and
yeah,
so it's like it's not going to change any type of ratings because you taped the show the weekend before. It's terrible. I mean, why not have it? I mean, they do live tapings on the weekend, typically Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They do live events. So why don't they just use one of those Saturday live events, tape that live event, make it a Raw? I'm sure the live event will be happy, you know, and why not make that a Raw? And there you go. I mean, book it as such. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Dillers are losing again on SmackDown. That's nuts. Different. And then Nakamura beating Orton. Of course, you know, that was pretty evident. We knew that that was.
What is Orton wearing? Like, what is he, that vest with that fur or feathers? Like, what are you doing? What is Orton now? It is there. I don't know. And like I said, I was, of course, a little more pro Orton than Cena, but ever since the whole Authority, when he was with the Authority, it just was like just downhill from there. And the only time Orton became interesting is when he had the little mini feud with Brock, and then of course when Brock took the liberties and busted him open the jet, and then we know the story of Brock and Jericho going at it backstage.
That really hurt him, I think.
Right, and then it's like, what are you? You was champ. What did you do? You wearing hoodies. Then you wearing like fleeces. Now you wearing feathered fur vests.
Yeah.
What?
All types of craziness.
I understand you gotta add definitely to your character. Don't get me wrong, I'm definitely pro Orton, but it's just like, can you find? It's like one of those things, like get a legend, like we get it, like you're a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you doing now? Like it is there.
Yeah. He's just there. He's just there collecting a paycheck. Yeah, it just seems like it. Yeah.
So at least Cena. Like I said, at least Cena, we know what Cena is. You know, at least other people, we know what they are. And to me, Orton and Seth Rollins, I mean, thank God Seth Rollins hit the tag title with Seth Rollins. by himself is like Orton is like, what are you?
I think with Orton though, it just kind of seems like he hasn't transcended the business. His life is the business. Like he's done a couple movies, but I mean,
yeah,
he's
Marine
not really
8.
To that, yeah.
Was it Marine 8 or Condemned or one of the movies?
Right. All right, brother,
it is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got like 2 minutes or so. So let's get to grading No Mercy 2002. Chris Jericho and Christian defeated Booker T and Goldust for the retaining the World Tag Team Championships. Torrey Wilson defeating Don Marie. RVD defeating Ric Flair. Very interesting. Jamie Noble retaining the Cruiserweight Championship by defeating with Tajiri with Nydia. Triple H defeating Kane, unifying the World Heavyweight and Intercontinental Championship. Angle and Benoit defeating Edge and Mysterio for the inaugural WWE Tag Team Championship. Trish Stratus defeating Victoria. Women's Championship retaining it. Then Lesnar defeating The Undertaker, retaining the WWE Championship in Hell in a Cell. Real quick, what grade do you give it?
I think it had B plus. That was a good place to be.
I think so too. All right, and lastly, No Mercy 2003. We'll pick up 2004 next week. Real quick, 2003, we got Tajiri retaining championship against Mysterio, Benoit defeating A-Train, Gowan defeating Matt Hardy, Basham's defeating APA, Vince defeating Stephanie. I quit match. Forced to resign. Kurt Angle defeating John Cena, which was a really good match. Show defeating Eddie Guerrero for United States Championship. And then once again, Lesnar beating Taker. Biker chain match this time.
That was a C. That was here in Baltimore. In my home. That was here.
Yep.
That was a C.
Yeah. I agree too. I wasn't a big fan of it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. As always, thank you so much, WrestleZone.com, Facebook Live. Thank you so much for RakaCon or just Con. I think Con is cooler. Taja Con, how about that? Tree, she's Tree. Maybe we talk a lot. She's really cool peeps. Trinesha's really cool peeps, man. And maybe I'm the level just to call her Tree now. So we'll see. But Trinesha, she's great. Thank you so much. Formerly known as RakaCon, now known as Con, to be on the show tonight for the Q&A. Thank you to the WrestleZone.com live chat. Thank you so much for everybody listening, Blog Talk Radio. God bless you all. And we're going to continue to have fun every single week here. Follow Crave Wrestling on Facebook at Crave Wrestling. Follow Under the Mat Radio, 7 p.m. on Tuesdays. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to continue to have fun on the show. God bless you all. And until next week, you all have a great week. Have a fantastic week of wrestling. And enjoy your week. And be blessed, everyone. And we are signing off. Chris Featherstone, WrestleZone.com, BlogTalkRadio.com. Once again, Crave Wrestling on Facebook, at Crave Wrestling on Twitter, Crave Wrestling on Instagram. What's up from Texas, it says. That's a comment. Hey, real quick, on WrestleZone, comment how you doing. What city are you from in Texas, and how's everything going where you are at? Definitely praying for you, praying for the state.
Yes.
And, wishing that everybody will be very well. So, God bless you all. Have a good night, and enjoy your week of wrestling. Chris Featherstone, ever proud. Signing off.
Thank you. God bless.